Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And sometime in the summer, I have to get your daughter to teach me how to swim. I need to know how. I'm not a stander. I just stand. I don't know how to swim.
She's available. You might have to go to Peru. She's down there for the Peace Corps. But yeah. It's a short commute. You can do it.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then. We have Chris here today, and Chris at some point is going to talk about things that Chris knows. But first, we're going to talk about things that I'm curious about. I'm assuming we have veterinarians who listen to this show. not cow and horse veterinarians, dog and cat.
Not large animal vets.
No. Right. No.
Although we may. I mean, you never
know.
Yeah.
But I don't want them. I mean, I want them to listen, but what I'm going to say doesn't apply to them, the question I'm going to ask. Michael has had dogs in the sense that he lived with me when I had dogs, and Michael reluctantly cared about the dogs, but it's not a dog.
That's not fair. I named Maggie.
Wow. You're not a dog
you
person.
You took the dog away from us, and then you put up a barrier between us, the birding dog. And your training methods are lacking, to say the least.
I don't have training methods.
I very luckily had a great relationship with my in-law's dog, no longer with us.
Charlie.
But Charlie was a great dog, great family dog, great with the kids.
Okay, well, our dog isn't. My dog isn't.
She's loving.
My dog loves people.
In an overbearing way.
But she jumps. She's a jumper.
Overbearing.
She's a jumper. She's a herder. She does all those things that are her nature, you know. Nigel has cats.
Yes.
So he doesn't...
Butch and Sundance.
What a surprise.
And do you have a dog or a cat?
My wife is...
allergic?
Yes, and has serial killer tendencies in that she doesn't like animals because she's allergic to them. So we have no dog, cat, anything.
It was
a big sacrifice when we got married because I love dogs, had dogs my whole life.
I don't want to say anything bad about your wife.
I've never met your wife.
But she's making this up. She just doesn't want to have pets.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
That's what I told her.
You've had
pets.
Dinner
Stop.
With Gia.
You know.
Yeah, you have met my wife. That's hurtful.
When did I meet Gia?
I don't want to go into the records, but we invited the Salizas to the oyster roast.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago. I mean, that's out of my mind.
It was
mind.
Delicious, by the way.
That's out of my mind. I don't remember that at all. But I do remember Elizabeth's wedding. I do remember that Chris came along.
Yeah, I did.
But
I came
I'm just
along.
Saying, without casting aspersions.
No comment about my marriage.
Your wife has made this up for years that she's allergic to
dogs.
We
have nothing like that. My kids are bereft of a dog, which I grew up with three dogs and... It was
dogs
a formative experience.
There's
dogs
lots of pets you could get. A snake.
Yeah, I've thought about that. Yep, I've thought about that. Yeah. Yep, gecko of some sort.
Did your kids ever get into the
monitor
the books,
lizard?
Who Will Win? It's a series of animal books where they pit one animal
against another.
Oh, no,
but I'm interested
another.
In that. Like a bear versus a giraffe or something. Yeah.
So the boys got very big into big cats, and now they're into snakes because they know dad's afraid of snakes. So every night they have mom print them pictures of snakes. Dad saw them working on a python.
Beautiful.
And then they just come around me hissing.
No.
The school, Bootsy found a book called Who Will Win? And the first one was Lion versus Tiger. And it goes through
that's a good battle.
It basically goes through the strengths of each one.
Is this sponsored by DraftKings?
But then it does an actual...
Can you bet?
It
Can
simulates
you gamble?
A fight. And at the end, one animal doesn't walk away.
Wow. That's lion, no good. Lion minus 150.
That kid shouldn't know about that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of talk about death in our house right now.
Wow.
Yeah. My kids did
can
not
I get
find
to the Chessie
that, thankfully.
Store?
Yes.
And Chessie isn't pooping the way she used to. Chessie is an older dog now. She's 8 years old. And Chessie was the most regular dog in the world. The amount of food that Chessie got when she was younger is the same amount of food that Chessie gets now. Nothing has changed. The going in hasn't changed. I take Chessie out in the morning in the 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock region, and Chessie goes out again around 10 o'clock, and then Chessie goes out again with me around 6 o'clock at night. And she used to poop all the time. You know, each one, not all the time, not like three times during the walk, just once, really good. Everybody was happy with it. And now she stopped doing that. Like all the time. Now maybe once a day, maybe twice a day. Doesn't do three times a day anymore. Again, with the same food intake. And now in order to get her to poop, I have to walk like miles. I mean, I have to keep going. You know, we used to have...
So that's what happened to your sneakers.
Yeah, everybody has a standard walk. Everybody knows how far they go.
This is the
route. We've added on blocks and blocks and blocks in order for me to get her to maybe go into what I call a making walk and squat down. And it's fine. I got bags with me. I'm ready to do it. And, you know, it's all fine. So I was wondering if maybe a veterinarian could tell me, is this common as dogs age? Because she's 8 now. Is it common that they poop less? Her appetite is fine.
But she seems fine overall.
Attitude is,
it doesn't seem like she's suffering anxiety.
No.
She seems good.
Nothing that I can see that's
wrong. She greeted me warmly this morning.
It's not like she's afraid to go away, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, seriously. Away from home. Like people who only go number two at the house. Like my kids.
She's never done it in the house yet.
Well, I mean, in the yard. Close to home.
I would be fine if she did it in the yard.
Now, I like the term making walk. Is she still taking care of her business on the main mid-morning 10 o'clock walk? Because she might have circled that one is where it gets done.
No, so half the time, no. What I'm saying is that instead of being 3 for 3, she's more frequently 2 for 3, and you got to earn it.
You got to work.
Yeah, you got to work.
Sounds like she needs some fiber in that diet.
Exactly. You know? So, I mean, I used to take her out. Well, we've been told maybe to give her some pumpkin, which is fibrous, and I'll get her to walk, get her to make.
As long as she's...
I used to take her out on a 30-minute walk, and it's now 40 to 45, and I'm accommodating, you know what I mean? But when I say to her, I go, hey, you know what? What would you like me to do? Where can we go here? So anyway, I just wanted to mention that on the assumption that there are some vets who listen to the show.
I think we'll get some.
But as Chris said, not large animal vets.
Yeah.
No. Like, in other words, what I don't want to hear is, so I have this cow and
Right.
In the moose business.
Yeah, we don't want to hear that.
And by the way, I should point out, on your walk this morning, it was very, very cold.
I wore the Lillehammer jacket.
I was going to say, it had to be a Lillehammer jacket.
It's turned cold for like 2 weeks, right? Yeah, no golf.
It was like 32 this morning.
Windy and cold this morning.
I mean, I've got a couple of days off from PTI because of the tournament, and there's no golf. It's too... Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Dogs don't care about cold or not.
I mean, my hand was chilled when I got my Starbucks this morning. So, I mean, we all deal with our own hardships.
Yeah.
Not all heroes wear capes.
Exactly. Well said, as usual, Nigel.
From Larry Marshall in Zanesville, Ohio. Thanks for mentioning the TK-inspired coasters on the show a couple of weeks ago. Ours are on the set.
Yeah. Yep.
I didn't expect that, and I certainly didn't expect over 100 littles to order sets of coasters.
Wow.
If you do the math, that's a lot of coasters. Needless to say, my free time is pretty full for the foreseeable future, but I enjoy the challenge. As I was staining coasters the other night, the thought occurred to me, with a sudden rush of orders for such a niche item, I wonder if anyone over at Etsy noticed and asked themselves, who or what is a Tony Kornheiser? As I was again prepping coasters Monday afternoon in the workshop and listening to the show, I was surprised to hear you read an Etsy ad on the pot. I'm not presumptuous enough to think there is some sort of correlation, but it is an odd coincidence. Anyway, thanks again for the shout-out, and thanks to the masses of littles who ordered. I promise I'm efforting to get them all finished. Again, ours are on.
Yeah.
You can see them
on ours on Liz's desk.
They're beautiful.
Use it every day.
And yours?
Mine on my coffee table. It's at my flat. Yeah,
from Dave Schramm in Colchester, Vermont.
Cats use it.
Yes, they do. Hi. With spring training underway, I assume we'll be hearing from Buster Olney soon. Well, I've put in that request.
Yes.
To Nigel. I think about sending him this every time you have him on, but of course it's too late by the time I hear him. So this is preemptive Buster strike. Since I know you are fascinated with his pre-sports writer life, allow me to add to his bio with this little story. I left for college in the fall of 1984. Feeling a little homesick, I called home from the payphone on our dorm floor.
Old school.
I got my mom, who after a cursory, "Are you okay?" explained she couldn't talk because they were barbecuing. Barbecuing, I thought, that's a little unusual. I couldn't recall the last time we barbecued, but okay. Post-Dave life, must roll on. I asked to speak to my father, and here's where it gets interesting. My mom replied, "He can't come to the phone. He's in the backyard playing wiffle ball with Buster." What? He's playing wiffle ball? He probably hadn't played wiffle ball with me in Let's See Forever, and who's Buster? Buster Olney was hired by my parents to work in our family bagel bakery in West Lebanon, New Hampshire, just a short drive across the border from where Buster grew up. My dad, though a friendly guy, never socialized with any of the people who worked for him until Buster. Wiffle ball, high school basketball games. My dad had a hand in helping Buster recruit a player to Vanderbilt. Pinball at the arcade. Probably took him for pony rides and fishing, too. For years after, as Buster was becoming famous, my mother would call me at work to say, "Are you watching ESPN? Buster is going to be on." I'd reply, "No, Mom, I'm at work. I don't watch TV at work." And remember, he replaced me. This is so Michael. To which she would reply with an exaggerated sigh, Well, you should watch. Sure, Mom. If you get tired of asking him about cows, you can ask him about bagels or my dad, who probably still talks to him since I assume he's in the will. Buster only, the son my father never had. At least it took almost a week to replace me. I got that going for me. Say hard for me. New Balance 626. Dave Schramm.
That is
chest.
Brilliant.
How great is that?
Brilliant.
Hold on to that.
I need to see if he has any summer camp memories.
Wiffle ball in the backyard with Buster.
Yeah. How great is
that? I can smell the grill
time.
From here.
It's just so great.
Such a fun time.
Yeah. That's one of the great
ones. Do you want cheese on your burger?
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Hi, son. You know Buster.
Yeah, Buster. He's staying in your room. I hope that's okay.
I like how he says he's probably in the will.
So yesterday, I just wanted to mention this. So yesterday, Mike was off PTI. And when Mike's off PTI, when I'm off PTI, Mike is free to do NBA stories.
Yeah.
Galore.
Up the gazoo. Okay? Because I'm not going to say, wait, I'm tired of
light
this.
Light the beam. The Sacramento Kings win again.
Yeah. You know. So, hey, and Wizards when Mike's win. Off, we can do what people want. NFL stories. Right. Because the NFL outrates the NBA by, I don't know, 50 to 1. So yesterday, Pablo was on. The whole A block was NFL stories.
Yeah, lots of NFL stories.
We did
stories.
A story about what's his name? Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm.
Not getting the $45 million tag.
Yeah, the 32.
They want the cheaper one. If they're going to lose him.
Non-exclusive.
Yeah, if they're going to lose him, he wants to make his own deal, and let's see what happens. And then we were able to do a speculative story on Aaron Rodgers. Wilbon hates those stories, refuses to do those stories. And then we did a story on Seattle signing Geno Smith and should they draft a quarterback. It was heaven because it was what people actually
ratings goal, Jerry.
Total ratings goal. And then in the B block, we did a couple of one basketball. What I don't even remember. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
But it was just wonderful. The Lamar Jackson thing, I sort of feel, I didn't say this on the air, but as you know, if you listen to this show, Jason thinks he's gone. He's been saying this for months.
Yep. Yeah.
He thinks he's gone.
Well, that's certainly.
And Baltimore has given him permission.
Yeah.
To work a deal, and then they'll see if they're going to match it. But I'm not sure. They should match it, but I'm not sure they will. I think what they're hoping for is sort of collusion on the part of the owners to exclude the Haslams and their all-guaranteed contracts, right? Doesn't it look like that? They're hoping for that.
I thought it was super weird that, like, Atlanta, for example, whose quarterback is currently Desmond Ridder, was, like, not interested. Like, it feels
right.
A little
they cut Marcus Mariota.
Collusion, you know, well, among the owners that, like...
It only takes
we're
one.
Not, I know, but
But
we're
only
not,
takes one.
I think Haslam. Setting the bar...
Well, Haslam's got already.
That's
true.
The problem. I think the Haslam thing, $240 million guaranteed, has set the bar so high for quarterbacks that they don't want to match. I just think it's weird that... Look, Lamar Jackson is 27?
Six?
Right.
Six, 27?
In his prime.
He's great.
Former MVP.
He's great. You can win a Super Bowl with him.
His win-loss record, I know that's not the only thing, but I think I heard it this morning. It's like 46-15 or something crazy like that. I mean, I would just think more teams like your Washington Commanders would be interested in
him. So now he's represents himself. I think this will get burdensome. He and his mom do this.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a football player, it's really hard to do this all the time.
It's why we have. It's why most people, even in our industry,
have a lawyer,
have representation. Right? I have an agent. You have a lawyer. I mean,
plus, I don't want to hate the people who are trying to screw
you don't
me
want to
out
get
of money.
Into the money.
No,
roll yourself off from that.
Jared is the greatest in the world.
Yeah.
He's how doing this alone? What are you doing?
You keep more of your money.
How
but
more?
It's just to me, how much do you
I think
need,
there's a
right?
law in the NFL. I think it's a 4% law. It's not 10 or
15. It's not 10. Interesting.
No.
Huh.
It's
okay.
not.
I did not know that.
Because there's so much money that they don't want to put you in jeopardy in that way of an unscrupulous agent. They don't want to do that.
Didn't you tell me, Chris, your agent takes 75%?
Yeah, no, that's industry standard.
Oh.
That's what they tell me. Yeah, that's how it goes. By the way, I just looked on ESPN.com, and what's the first thing I see? A picture of the orange bald man. Why Tony Kornheiser is questioning Ravens' handling of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
There it is. Right on time.
You made the big time.
Yeah.
Don't ever look at social media and tell me about it.
ESPN.com.
This is the real website.
ESPN.com. This is the website.
What is that?
Yeah, it's my gosh.
They've been promoting clips of you recently.
Do you know that over the years, it is conceivable I have over a million messages from them that I have never seen.
Good.
I have never logged on to ESPN.com or whatever it is that I would log on to as an employee.
Maybe that's where you choose the good healthcare insurance.
Yeah, my healthcare. Exactly.
Yeah, I got hosed. The Cigna thing. Again, callous indifference gives no aid. Cigna. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back and ask Chris questions about his wheelhouse, or are we not?
Mark Feinsand.
Feinsand first?
Yes.
Or Mark, and then Chris. Okay, yes. Feinsand first. And we have background on... We're not going to... It's not just baseball.
No.
It's apparently Feinsand wanted to be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if there was... If Dave in Colchester, Vermont, if his dad knew that about Feinsand, then he would have taken him in the bagel joint too. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news... You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Andrew Bruce in Columbia, South Carolina. That is the part of the state where the University of South Carolina is. And he writes, I'm excited to share two songs written and performed by the woman I'm related to by marriage, Abby Bruce. This is called Heaven, right? This is Heaven?
Yes.
And he says, the first track, Heaven, is especially significant for me as she wrote the first draft of the lyrics as an anniversary present for me several years back. Isn't that wonderful? She recorded these songs last year while pregnant with our third child, a masculine child. We have two older boys, aged 6 and 4, so I've found too many parallels with Michael's stories in our own lives to even count. This is Abby Bruce, who says, please give my regards to Edith. Edith is here today, so that's mm-hmm. wonderful. This is called Heaven. She's really good.
It's very good. Yes.
She's really good.
Really good.
Wow. Yeah. And again, we're always stunned when we think about how good these people are, and we don't know that they're making any money.
We hope they are.
Oh, yeah. Okay, she plays in Mark Feinsand, and we can talk about baseball, and we will. And I will ask Mark at some point how the new rules are going. You know, and I will ask Mark maybe one other question about baseball. But we're not talking about that, because we got an email that you wanted to be a director, that you went to college at BU to be a director. You want to talk about this, please?
That's absolutely true. I was wanted to be a film director since ninth grade. I was very inspired by Tim Burton. He was my favorite director, very creative guy, and that was where I saw my life heading. I was going to go to USC. Some things happened. I didn't go there. I ended up at Boston University, and in my freshman year, we did like the Communications 101, where they give you 2 or 3 weeks on each aspect of the school, and the film lectures were dreadfully boring. And I said, I'm out. And I was trying to figure out what was next. And the gentleman named Jack Falla, who used to write for Sports Illustrated, gave one of the journalism lectures. And I was enraptured by his speech and his talk. And I talked to him afterwards. And all of a sudden I said, all right, going to be a journalism major. Let's go.
Okay. We're going to go backwards on this a little bit. We're going to go back to the I'm out part. You know, like you wanted to do this since ninth grade.
Just boring. I'm out.
I'm out. So wait, I just want to establish the parameters here. You never wanted to be an actor.
Well, I did when I was younger. I had did a lot of theater when I was a kid in high school. Tried out for a movie, actually made it to like the final 10 for a role in the movie Big, which my friends love to torture me about when that movie comes on. But I discovered pretty quickly that I didn't want to be a waiter, and so the actor thing was not where I was headed. And I talked to somebody at BU after the film lectures, and I said, hey, how much of the film curriculum is, you know, all the technical stuff? Because, you know, how much is the creative stuff? And they said, oh, it's probably about 90-10. I said, huh. And I just couldn't see myself going through the technical aspects of film. You know, I had thought about being a director as a teenager, thinking it was, you know, well, you go on set and you tell everybody what to do, and you figure out what looks cool, and you make a movie. You know, I was shooting movies on a little Sony... you know, the little mini VHS tapes that you used to have back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. I never thought about the big equipment and sort of how difficult directing is. So, you know, I directed some stage stuff in high school, but that was, you know, not very technical. So, yeah, you know, and then I was always a huge sports fan. I did some writing for my school paper when I was in high school, and so I knew I could write a little bit. I said, well, I love movies, but I also love sports. So let's give this a try. It seems like it might be more fun.
Okay, well, again, we're going to go backwards a little bit. You directed, you wanted to direct films more so than plays. Do I have that correct? That's what you wanted to do?
Yes, yes. Okay. I was completely in love with movies. I watched every movie I could get my hands on. I had a gigantic VHS collection of, you know, I would just tape movies off HBO and watch them. And you know, he saw everything I could see in the theater. You know, big movie would come out. My friends and I may have left school a little early to go catch an afternoon flick. but, yeah, I loved movies.
Okay.
I was, you know, that's where I wanted to be. Now, if I'd actually ended up going to USC, maybe I would have stayed in the film thing because I would have been there specifically for that. But this gentleman, Jack Fallah, who passed away about 8 or 10 years ago, was a hockey writer for SI and was just a huge inspiration in my life, a huge mentor. And his class, sports journalism class in particular that I took as a junior, really sort of cemented, okay, this is what I want to do.
Again, I'm going backwards. I'm going to go backwards. This is like Chuck and Roxy. I'm going to go backwards.
Who, by the way, are lovely.
Yeah.
I don't know. Experience on their podcast.
That's how we heard They're about great. This. So let me go backwards to this. I can't even imagine being a director. I mean, as I sit here and do this show right now, cannot imagine what it is to be a director. I have great admiration for the Steven Spielbergs of the world that they can do this. What was your, Mark, what would you say your biggest skill was in terms of directing, where you said, I've got this, so I know I can be a director?
Well, I like to boss people around. That was number one. I just, you know, I was interested in the different creative aspects of it, of why is this movie good? Why is this movie bad? And you'd watch something like Goodfellas and see the shot where they're walking through the kitchen and be like,
and the Ronettes are playing. Yeah.
How did Scorsese think of that? And matching up the music with it. And, you know, or you'd watch Reservoir Dogs in the scene where they slow-mo their walk. And I know I'm mentioning some very obvious ones, but as a teenager, you're looking at the obvious ones. I think, you know, just the idea of taking a story, because I wasn't a screenwriter. I never wrote plays. I never wrote, you know, I wrote, I guess, some short movies that we direct, you know, that we did as kids, but nothing that was really good. But I liked the idea of taking a piece of somebody else's work and putting your vision to it. And I did that. I directed One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in high school, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, so obviously you're very influenced by the movie when you're 17. But we tried to, you know, sort of put our spin on it. I don't know if we succeeded or not. I think you'd be better off watching Jack Nicholson. But it was fun. And I liked the whole process of, putting your creative take on something. And so, you know, look, when you're 16, you have no idea what you're going to do with your life. I'm telling that to my kids now. They're
I don't
both
know.
In high school.
I don't know.
But sometimes you do.
I did. I knew. I was 7 or 8 or 6, and I knew exactly what I wanted to be. And I became that thing. And so, I mean, if I had written for my high school paper and my teacher at the time, Mrs. Carol Bartlett Smitten, who didn't like me, if she had said, you have no talent whatsoever, I'm not sure I would have said, I'm out. I'm not sure, Mark. I'm not sure that one thing would have gotten me to say, I'm out.
Well, it wasn't just one thing. It was a little more digging after those lectures. But what's funny about that is I wrote for my high school paper. And I didn't think I was a writer at all. But I had a teacher, and I never did particularly well in English, and I had a teacher named Janice Warner. She was my 11th grade English teacher. And she was the first teacher I ever had who sort of said, you are a good writer. You can do this. Just focus a little
and
more.
People and people like you.
You know, exactly. And she was the first one that ever made me think, wow, maybe I can write a little bit. And I started writing more for the school paper. So even though I didn't go to college thinking, I want to be a sports writer, I want to do this, I knew that it was something I enjoyed doing because I had done it in high school. And, you know, as big of a movie fan as I was and as much as I wanted to do that, sports were always the biggest thing for me. I mean, I was a huge sports fan, you know.
Well, you could have been Ron Shelton. You could have written and directed the greatest sports comedies of all time.
Yeah, but Ron Shelton had already made those movies.
Oh, that's a problem.
The next Ron Shelton.
You could have been the next Ron Shelton. But why didn't you, maybe you did, maybe, and before you said, I'm out, did you ever say, maybe I could transfer to NYU film school, or maybe I could go somewhere else and pursue this? maybe the because I had one bad lecturer at BU, I'm not going to get off this. Did that ever come up?
NYU is a non-starter. I grew up in Manhattan, and I was not going to college in Manhattan.
Okay.
So that was not an option, and USC was very far away. And those are the two film schools that everybody looks at.
Right.
You know what? It was not as much as me deciding I'm absolutely out on film as much as me hearing these other, you know, hearing Jack Fallis speak and talking to him about that business and deciding, you know what, maybe that's where I should be. Like, maybe this is better suited for me. Maybe this is where I'm meant to be. And, you know, I'm not always a believer in, like, everything happens for a reason. But, you know, if they had any other lecturer for the journalism class besides Jack Fallis, I might not be where I am right
now. That's right.
So, that's right. You know, the first book I ever wrote, I dedicated to him. He was a huge influence on me. I went and spoke at BU. After he passed away, they established this speaker series in his name, and I went up and spoke, and it was his son was there. It was really emotional for me. And, you know, Jack was just a wonderful guy, a great writer. He's written several books, a big hockey guy. And, you know, I just think having him, maybe if I'd slept through that lecture that morning, who knows where I'd be, but I was there, and it was great, and here I am.
Would you like to direct community theater even now? Could we convince you to do something like that?
Well, it's probably been 30 years since I've directed anything, and right. Given the success, and given the, I guess, lack of success that I have directing my own kids, I'm guessing at this point that the directing thing is probably out the window.
I just find it interesting that people, you know, I found that story very, very interesting. Well, is there a particular reason, by the way, because your mentor was a hockey guy, and you're a baseball guy. How did you get to baseball?
By chance. I was my first couple of jobs out of college were not baseball related. I was a staff writer and assistant editor at Sports Business Daily, which is a sports business trade publication. And then I was at FoxSports.com for a couple of years, sort of jack of all trades, doing a little bit of golf, a little bit of baseball, some New York stuff. And then MLB.com started up in 2001.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was working there, and he told me, hey, they're looking for a Yankee writer and a Mets writer. And he got me an interview. I actually interviewed for the Mets job first. They wanted more of a Mets fan at the time because it was the first year, and I think the teams were really involved in hiring. I ended up getting the Yankee job despite the fact that I had never covered a baseball team. It was quite an introduction to baseball beat life, jumping into the Yankees beat with Buster Olney and Dan Graziano and all these guys, you know, Anthony McCarron and all these really established beat writers, Ken Davidoff, George King, and it was really intimidating. But I figured it out after a year or two and ended up, you know, at the Daily News 6 years later and 16 years on that beat. And here I am in year 23 of covering baseball. And I was talking to somebody. I was at a Diamondbacks game yesterday, and I was talking to our Diamondbacks writer. We were the beat writers for the first World Series at MLB.com in 2001. And we were reminiscing about that. I can't believe it was 22 years ago. It feels like it was yesterday. So it's gone by pretty fast. But you know, once you get into that baseball writing universe, it's pretty addictive.
They're lifers. God bless them. Steve Jacobson, my dearest friend in the world. When you're a baseball writer, you're a baseball writer for life. You are. That's it. That's the addiction. The football writers are not for life. Basketball writers, please stop. Am I right on this, Mark? Baseball writers is a lifetime job.
Yeah, and I think part of it is I look at baseball as being the best sport to tell stories. And, you know, that's what we do. We want to go out there and tell stories. Look, the reporting is great, and that's what we do, especially in my job now. I'm trying to find out who's signing where and who's trading who.
Yeah.
And, at the Daily News, we did a lot of work on the PED situation with A-Rod and all those other things. But at the heart of it, you want to tell stories. You want to tell people why they like baseball, why they should love this sport, why they should like this guy, the interesting story about this guy. We have more access in baseball. There's more games in baseball. There's more days you're around the team in baseball. And there's more sort of quirky characters in this game. And I think that the storytelling aspect of baseball is unrivaled in sports in general. And so if you like, you better like the sport because you're at the ballpark a lot and you cover a lot of games. And God knows you have a lot of Marriott nights. But
yeah.
It's the best writing sport because there's just so many intricacies of the game on the field, off the field, and people in the game have so many diverse backgrounds that it really gives you an opportunity to dig in and tell a lot of different stories.
So, you know, my son Michael was Joe Hardy in Damn Yankees. If we did that around here, would you direct it?
Maybe. I'll tell you one quick funny story. So the one director I've ever had any encounter with, like famous director, was Penny Marshall. And I've had two encounters with her in my life. The first one was as a 12 or 13-year-old trying out for the movie Big. I tried out for the role of Tom Hanks' best friend. And I got, I think, to the final 10 or so. What? And I went and read for Penny Marshall. I didn't get the role, obviously. Fine. No problem. A great experience, et cetera. Fast forward to about 2005 or so, Penny Marshall's at the Yankee game, standing on the field during BP. And my friends on the beat knew about my history of having tried out for this movie and read for her. And they're like, you have to go say hello and tell her that you read for her as a 12-year-old. And I said, well, it's sort of silly. Well, she knows they're not going to care. They're like, you have to. You're here. It would be great. So I go over and I said, hey, Penny, how are you? I'm Mark Meinzen. I'm the writer for the Daily News. Funny story, actually, I read for you for Big back in 1987, 88. And she looks at me and goes, oh, and then turns her head the other way.
Right. That's great.
And my friends are watching this. Tyler Kettner and Sweeney Murdy are watching this from the dugout, and they are dying.
That's
and I walked back. I said, that's the last time I'll ever listen to either of you.
That's so great. Thanks for being on. I don't even care if the new rules are working. I assume the new rules are working, right? You have nothing else to report on that. They're working so far.
Games are a lot shorter. I'll tell you this. Everybody in the press box really enjoys 2.5-hour games. And just the pace of them have been great. They've been just much crisper. And even in spring training, when things are a little less crisp, usually in second half of games, you've got AA players playing a lot of them. I think players are going to use this month to adapt to them. And by the time we get to the season, certainly by the time we get to May 1st or Memorial Day, I think people are not even going to be talking about it. It's going to be second nature. So they're learning, they're figuring it out, but so far so good, I think.
Thank you, Mark. We will talk again soon. Thank you for sharing those life stories. Appreciate it. Mark Feinstein, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll get to Chris. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Abby Bruce. This is a song called Man from Alabama. Her music is found on all the major streaming services. Check out her EP, her husband says. Is this a word? Summal justus et peccator? What does that mean? That sounds Latin to me.
Yeah, as a former Latin student, sounds that's Latin. Latin.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have to get
what it says.
By the way,
I would
it's the crystals in The Godfather. Not The Godfather.
In Goodfellas.
In Goodfellas. It's the crystals. I got both things wrong now.
Yeah,
it's not the Ronettes. It's the crystals. And it's Then He Kissed Me, which is also, by the way, covered by Al Jardine on the Beach Boys album.
Oh, yeah. They do a great version.
They do a great job.
And I just want to just shout out to Tony Reale for one of the best versions of that. Remember when he did the handheld?
Yes.
As he was walking into Around the Horn?
Just wonderful.
Fantastic.
Just wonderful. Okay. Thank you to Abby Bruce. Michael, if people like Abby Bruce or her hubby wants to send in her music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
All right, so we need to talk to Chris about a variety of things. But we don't need to what we're going to talk about first, we don't need to talk to Chris about, because he doesn't know any more than the rest of us know about this. This story in Mexico is actually, I don't want to say it's unbelievable, because it is believable.
It's terrifying,
It is totally terrifying.
Yes.
Yesterday, when I heard about this, I called Chuck Todd because I wanted to know. Because in the story that I read, and nobody really knew what was going on, it said that these people had gone to Mexico from Texas for a medical procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called Chuck because I figured he would know. I said, a medical procedure? And he goes, a tummy tuck.
Yep.
I go, unbelievable. What do you make of this?
So,
what about the lawlessness 5 feet from the United States of America?
I was going to say, so The report is they four of them went down there. They're from South Carolina.
They got in a car.
Four of them went down there. They crossed in Texas, you know, so that part of the southern border. And within minutes were being fired on and taken out of their car and put into a van and being transported to, I think, three different locations. Yes. If you look at where they were taken versus where they were found in a house south of where they were taken.
Yeah, like a wooden
with
shack
two
like
of them dead, one with a bullet wound in the leg, I believe, and one not injured. I mean, it...
Were they going to be held hostage for money?
Well, so what I have read, and like you said, I caveat this with, I know what I've read. I have no special reporting on this. The I team has not been out to investigate this. But the from what I have read, there is some speculation that they were mistaken for Haitian immigrants, or migrants rather, Haitian migrants who fetch a significant price.
They're sold?
When kidnapped. That's what I've read.
Really?
They're, when kidnapped, they get
a nice
paid
return.
Off. On, right. I know I'm not saying it right, but exactly what Nigel said. And so that is apparently the speculation of why it happened the way it happened. But I mean, it literally is within like a minute of them crossing the border. They were immediately accosted and shoved into a van and taken away.
Is this a common practice that people go to Mexico for liposuction?
I would assume it's just cheaper there. I mean, I don't
know. Is this not unbelievable?
Especially when there's there is, I believe, I think it's a level 4 warning from the United States about travel to Mexico. I mean, this is, Mexico is not in a good place right now. I mean, you know, they probably were unaware of this, but there are warnings from the U.S. government about do not go to these places because of the potential for violence.
So there are two pieces that seem like are confusing too, which is, by and large, are people leaving this country to go get medical procedures at a cheaper rate? And the answer is a resounding yes. And I think this is something that happens worldwide.
I had no
where
idea.
People are leaving to get easier access to mostly elective surgeries.
Yep.
And then the second piece would be how quickly they're able to surround this car. And you look at it going, well,
it's like a military operation.
How much messaging is there that says stay away from Americans because we'd like to keep attention as far away from us as possible?
Yes.
And that's where there seems to be this.
That's to the confusion point.
When you're going across the border, don't you have to go across the border at what we call a border crossing? Aren't there like gates and things? Does somebody in the United States say to these people, we don't think this is a great idea. We cannot help you over there. And we think that you're in some sort of jeopardy. This is not like going to a resort or a cruise, right? This is a different situation.
Right, but not everything is like the, you know, the Tijuana checkpoint that you're thinking of. And I think Chris might have a better experience with this just because he sees every year how vast Texas is.
Yeah, I mean...
And this is something that was coming to our attention. We were, like, you know, years ago, we're talking about the wall, and you just think about how much space you're trying to account for, but you look at this area and you'd always have these communications about like, hey, here's the best places to visit if you're going over the border just to get a cheaper meal or to get a different, you know, different type of food.
I think that there are, to Michael's point, there are elaborate places where you cross where there's a huge facility and
that's what I'm used to in my mind.
But I don't think that's every place that you cross. I mean, again, I'm basing that somewhat just on intuition that if the reports are to be believed, it was less than 5 minutes after they crossed that they were accosted. So
that would make sense, mistaken identity.
Exactly. Because I think to Michael's point, I do not think these cartels are in the business of, and they do believe it was a cartel.
These cartels run parts of Mexico.
Are not in the business of kidnapping Americans for the exact reason Michael said. It's just bad PR. You know, they don't want to draw attention to, it's not worth the hit you take, as this story is showing. I mean, it's become a national story.
Oh, my.
Right. I mean, the Mexican president, I thought, said something interesting. It might have been the governor of this area. I don't want to attribute it. But a Mexican politician said, you know, they don't report on the Mexicans killed when they cross the border in the United States. You know, which I don't know if it's at all similar in terms of numbers. But I would say, like, it is. This story has gotten a huge amount of attention.
I think rightly so.
Totally agree. Now,
can I go back to what you said about these medical procedures? This is a common practice. People leave the United States because they're cheaper, where, like in Mexico and Canada.
Well, but even if you try,
they drove across the country.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think in other parts of the world, you know, you see this throughout Asia as well. Not necessarily going to Mexico for procedures, but as to, you know, what, how far you're willing to go just to get something done.
Yep.
I also think you underestimate the amount of plastic surgery happening both in this country and in other countries.
It's stunning.
Vast.
Yeah. I must.
Yeah.
No,
vast.
I've read some pieces.
I mean, I got my calves done recently.
Do you think, okay... Well, this is a little bit off the point, but these, whoever they were going to see in Mexico, do you think that they are licensed physicians and know what they're doing? Or do you think this is a back alley situation?
I mean, I think to Michael's point, it's cheaper.
Do they advertise in the United States then?
I think that you could look at this in terms of certain construction stuff where you might go through a permitting process for certain projects that reach a certain level or scale. And there's certain things that just go, it's easier to just get it taken care of by somebody who's done this, you know, many, many times. It's not that big of a deal.
Yep. Well, we wouldn't do it, but
I'll go back to my original thought about this. This is across the street from us and it is lawless.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, yes.
I don't expect that from Mexico. I expect a centralized government.
I think Mexico is in far worse shape than the average person realizes. Absolutely. I think they don't. Yeah. We don't think about it that often, even though it's our neighbor to the south. I think it is, in terms of crime and the control the cartels have, at least over certain parts of the country, in far worse shape than we think about.
I think these incidents
sort of bring that to the fore.
Can I ask another political question?
Sure.
In recent weeks and months, it appears that the Republican Party has turned the conservative party that was always in favor of keeping the Russians down has seemed to turn the other way and wants us out of the Ukraine, even though Ukraine is fighting the Russians.
Yep.
Can you explain that? That seems like a pivot that I never expected.
So there's a split within the Republican Party. I would still say the majority of the Republican Party, is still hawkish in terms of foreign policy and pro-Ukraine and pro-providing Ukraine with the military things it needs to fight Russia. But there is definitely a segment within the party. This is Matt Gaetz of Florida, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, some of the more...
I thought Matt Gaetz was under investigation and could be charged.
No longer. The investigation closed. Yes. The more Trumpy elements of the House Republican Party are now essentially saying, J.D. Vance, the new senator from Ohio, has said some of this, like, we need to spend money on this country. We need to stop spending money on foreign wars. Ukraine is very far away. We need to spend the money here. Trump is, you know, he gave a big speech on Saturday night in Maryland. He said he walked that line of saying we need to end foreign wars. We need to reinvest in this country. I think it's a dividing line he's going to draw between him and DeSantis, Ron DeSantis from Florida, who will also run for president, who is in second in every poll I've seen to Trump. Trump was very sort of anti-intervention during his time in office, and I think he'll continue. But yeah, it's a remarkable thing because it used to be that Republicans would hit Democrats for being
constantly soft,
for being soft on sort of foreign aid and all that
stuff. My whole life.
And now you have the opposite being true in that Democrats are united behind aid to Ukraine and Republicans are splintered. Now, again, I don't think it's a 50-50 split. I still think there are more Republicans in elected office and just generally who are...
Mitch McConnell is.
Right. McConnell. McCarthy has been a little bit wishy-washy, but I think overall is still pro money to Ukraine. But there is a significant block of voters and politicians who are now saying, like, should we keep spending money?
One more thing. At what point will Trump unload on DeSantis?
I mean, I think he already is in certain ways. So again, the speech he gave over the weekend, he didn't mention DeSantis. He didn't mention anyone running against him, but he did talk about Republican politicians who have supported cutting Medicare and Social Security. DeSantis did do that when he was in the House. So that's an attack. He is also, and I know you'll appreciate this, he is also road testing nicknames for DeSantis.
Are we done with the sanctimonious?
So he really, according to the reporting, Donald Trump really likes Ron DeSanctimonious, which is what he uses. But there are a number of other suggestions, including my favorite.
Tiny D?
Tiny D.
Tiny D?
Tiny D. That is apparently considered. Or there's also Meatball Ron.
Is he small?
I think
is he
small?
No, not particularly. I mean, he's smaller. Trump is big, right?
Can I ask you this other question? And this is not my idea. This is a friend of mine's idea. If you debated Trump, why wouldn't you seriously at the end of every sentence say, you know, you're fat? No, really, you're fat.
You have small hands.
And you're fat.
Yeah.
And see if you could get him to go crazy.
So I don't know if you
He does that to you.
I don't know if you remember this. During the 2016 campaign, there was like a five-day window where it looked like Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, was going to...
Little Marco, exactly,
as you remember. He is diminutive, by the way, right. Marco Rubio. It looked like he was going to be the guy to be the Trump alternative. This was before Ted Cruz was, you know, it was early in the race. And so the Rubio people made like a very interesting decision that they were going to do exactly what you said, that the fight fire with fire.
Yeah. We got to have the stomach for
it. That is when Rubio started attacking. You know, Trump is famously thin-skinned about a lot of things, but about his hand size. Like, that's a thing. Like, that people...
Right, I remember that.
Like, a long time ago, some reporter wrote that he had... I think it might have been Graydon Carter wrote that he had small hands, and, like, he'd been obsessed with everything. So Rubio did a thing where he said, you know, I mean... You know what they say about guys with small hands, and like left it at that. So he kind of went into that gutter with Trump. And it was a couple days later at a debate where Trump said, I think the most stunning thing he's ever said, like in a Republican debate, he said, there's no problem that my hands are normal and there's no problem down there. I guarantee you. I mean, he said that in a debate.
I remember that. Yeah.
In a Republican presidential debate. But what wound up happening was it kind of...
In all fairness, did that also happen in the Lincoln-Douglas debate?
It's so true, yes. Douglas Douglas questioned Lincoln's manhood, yeah.
Yeah.
That rebounded, boomeranged in a really negative way for Rubio. People yes. like, oh, Rubio's getting down in the mud. Like, people have a
you
different
have to
standard,
get in the mud.
But people have a different, they judge Trump by a standard, a much lower standard, than they judge anyone else. And that is the problem. It's like, when you get in the mud, he doesn't get it on him, whereas you get it all over yourself. Like, people have tried it. It just hasn't worked. So I kind of generally agree with you that, like, why not just go at him? But if past performance is indicative of future results, it might not work.
It would be fun to see. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Cane Bay High School, it's lovely. So evocative for me every time I hear it. I love it. Do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us.
Bethesda Bagels. We got the bagel sandwiches there. We're always happy about that.
Yes.
You can get them too. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled, my friend.
That'll just about do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say love is strange. A lot of people take it for a game. Once you get it, you never want to quit. No, after you've had it, you're in an awful fix. Most people don't understand. They think loving is money in the hand. Your sweet loving is better than a kiss. When you leave me, sweet kisses I miss. That's either Peaches and Herb or Ian and Sylvia. It's one of those
Mickey
two.
And Sylvia.
Mickey and Sylvia.
Mickey and Sylvia, yes.
Yeah, not Ian. Ian and Sylvia or somebody else. Oh. Mickey and Sylvia. Ian and somebody. Yeah, I think so.
Was that song in that movie you love? Jennifer Grey, Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, it's Dirty Dancing. I don't know that it was in that.
Okay.
Thanks to our guests, Mark Feinstein and Chris Saliza. This is a fun show. Thanks to our sponsors today, Policy Genius, HelloFresh, Simply Safe. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. I've got some old ones here from Dan Navin. Cara Cara Oranges were on sale at my local grocery store for $2.99 for 3 pounds a bag. 3 pound bag. Not as tasty as Haagen-Dazs, but a little healthier. Thinking on sale, I'll give them a try. As I walked downstairs on Sunday, the woman related to me by marriage said, "Don't buy those Cara Cara oranges again. They're a pain in the behind to peel." My reply is, "They taste good." Her reply is, "Not as good as the ones that are easy to peel." My reply is, "Michael likes them." Wife's reply is, Kevin likes them. Your brother? Me, no, Kornheiser. Slight shake of the head. Don't buy them again. Next time I will purchase the Haagen-Dazs.
I judge any orange that you can't peel in one single piece.
Oh, that's good.
From Bill Masters, "You got to see Elvis. It's a tribute to the music that was a soundtrack of your life. You will enjoy it, trust me. Full disclosure, my wife Gail Berman is the producer. It took her 10 years to make the movie. I would like to be the official spouse of an Oscar nominee on the Tony Kornheiser show." Sure. P.S. Ask Peter Melman about Gail. Melman will listen to this and he'll tell me.
Sure.
From Greg Thomas in Cincinnati, "The many memories of Howard Johnson's in Galena, Ohio, has stirred memories of my growing up in Columbus, Ohio. My first job was in the laundry at Howard Johnson's on Route 161 in North Columbus.
Glamour
I was 13 years old. I made the minimum wage at the time, $1.25 an hour, summer before my freshman year of high school, and I blame this job for my propensity to avoid manual labor. To say it was hot would not come close to describing working in a windowless, no air conditioning room with industrial sized washers and dryers constantly running. And the things guests did to the towels and sheets. We never came close to the restaurant and the ice cream. My memories of Galena are much better. Galena was home to Blackhawk Golf Course. At one time was ranked in the top 10 public courses in Ohio. My father played there every Tuesday in his company's golf league. Every once in a while he would take me along as his caddy, and I would always caddy for him when they held their championship on a Saturday. As I got older, we would play together, along as my two older brothers. He was not a good golfer, but he taught me the etiquette of the game, replacing divots, repairing ball marks, etc. We played as often as we could until he was unable to make it around the course. I think it was when he was around 90 years old that he was no longer able to play. He died when he was 95. Blackhawk was always his favorite course. You'd have loved it because it has zero sand traps. I still use some of his clubs when I golf. Alas, Blackhawk no longer exists. I think it is now a housing development. I was told a few years ago that Jason Day lived near the course at one time. But thanks for bringing those memories to me. I hope you and Michael have many more rounds left. I never had a bad day on the course with my dad. I've never had a bad day on the course with my son." From Matt Mark of Damascus, Maryland, "The story of Tony's dad saving styrofoam made me want to share a story about my mom. She grew up on a small dairy farm about 20 minutes outside of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. She was the youngest of eight, born during the Great Depression, and lived through rationing during World War II. My parents built a house on a lot at their farm. I think that because of that upbringing, anything that could possibly be useful didn't get thrown out. That included the disposable cups from fast food restaurants used if we went to pick raspberries, straws, why buy new ones, and egg cartons, a lot of egg cartons. When I had kids of my own, their elementary school art teacher sent a list of items she wanted to use in art class, asking for parents to get them for her. Egg cartons were on the list. I said, I can hook her up with egg cartons. On my next trip to my parents' house, we filled up the back of the minivan with three floor-to-ceiling stacks of egg cartons that accumulated in the basement over 40 years. Mom was happy that someone could use them. I've inherited some of that mentality, but not to the extent of my parents. My kids won't have to deal with egg cartons accumulating in the basement." From Chris in Raleigh, North Carolina, but he's currently in Amsterdam. "As a present to the woman to whom I'm related by marriage, has taken me to London, Paris. We are now in Amsterdam. While here, one of the places we went to visit is the Tulip Museum." Yes, the Tulip Museum, which, as a former writer and someone who lives on that side of the street might be interested to know, is a block away from the house Anne Frank hid in when she wrote her diary. "As we're walking through the museum, there is a slideshow in which they tell the story of the rise and fall of tulips as a currency, at which points I said out loud, 'Like crypto,' to which my wife gave me a look I can only believe was the same what a rum-dum look Carol gave to you when you introduced her as your sister to Jacqueline Smith." From Dave Berman in Kenosha, Wisconsin, "When I was in high school, I took a psychology class, and one of the chapters was on operant conditioning. We had a Skinner box and a white lab mouse that was learning that hitting the lever led to the food being dispensed. Each weekend, a different student had the chance to bring the mouse and the box home with him or her. When it was my weekend with the mouse, I brought it home and I kept it in my bedroom. You can imagine my horror when I came back from soccer practice on Saturday and found that Ichabod, our cat, had gotten the cage open and ate the mouse. The cat's going to cat, right?
Yeah, that's what cats
anyway,
do.
I did what any responsible, almost adult would do. I rode my bike to the pet store, bought the closest looking mouse to the one the cat ate, and kept my mouth shut when the class questioned why the mouse had somehow regressed in its learning. Until this email, I've never told a soul. Given that was over 40 years ago, and I don't know of any classmates who are littles, I'm probably in the clear, right?
It's a scientific method.
Great. From John Shackelford. I'm a longtime little from the village of Mer Rouge, Louisiana, a small farming community in northeast Louisiana. The Mer Rouge State Bank is the smallest bank in Louisiana, but has all the services you need. If you call, a person will answer. You can even have the president's cell number. Your money is safe there. While they do make loans to farmers, they don't make loans to restaurants. Too risky. And from Gordy in San Diego. If we're talking about favorite rivers, and this is a long time ago, this is last August. If we're talking about favorite rivers, I'd have to say that I'm partial to a particular body of water that's typically visited in the middle of the night while you're walking in your sleep. The only issue is the river is wide and it's too hard to cross. On second thought, maybe Billy was talking about the Susquehanna. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Why do I want to puke?
In Alabama.
been reeling. There's been a feeling of wheeling and dealing. I bartered with God, but he stole her away. Said the man. Of my life.